Bob Summers, Reel 4. So, I mean, all this time you were on the European mainland. I mean, what was sort of accommodation you were in? You mentioned the farmhouse you were in at one stage. But what were you in otherwise?
Well, if I didn't sleep in the on the seat of my half-track, we just moved into bomb property, or if it wasn't bomb property, we made sure the people got out so that we could get in. So there was no problem with accommodation. I mean, there was no. It was just rough. As you mean, we all carried our little camping beds, if you hadn't got those, you slept on the floor. You know, so no problem.
So you were actually sometimes having to sort of ditch
the
owners out of the house.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
What was their attitude? What was their attitude to you arriving? I mean,
well. Well, be careful what I say, weren't they? Those days, they were the horrid Germans, weren't they?
So they were very resentful of you.
Well, I don't know whether they were or not. We couldn't care less, quite frankly.
Right. So you didn't get any cooperation from them?
Only after the end of the war, when we found that there was not a certain... there wasn't any Nazis amongst them. And a lot of the... mayors of the little villages or whatever they had would do anything for a packet of cigarettes. And I think the ladies would do other things for one cigarette, but the mayors were about two or three packets of cigarettes and you could get what you wanted in the town.
Right. So, what about sort of health and sanitation and washing and so on? I mean, how and waste disposal and all those things?
Well, do you know, it's one of those funny things that's a complete blank in my mind. I've no doubt it was 100% crude. But, you know, it's one of those things, which, much to my surprise, I just cannot remember. Very odd.
Yeah.
Which is all I can say. I can remember some of the German places we took billets to the German soldiery had been. And that was revolting.
Really?
Oh, Lord, yes. Mm. The German latrine for a unit was a trench, whatever length it had to be, with a pole stretched across it. Mm. I'll leave the rest to your imagination.
Yeah.
It was revolting. Yeah. God knows what we did. I just cannot remember what we did, but I think we were pretty discreet, whatever we did.
Oh, right. I would have thought they would have been better organised than that. Yes. Yeah. I mean, did you have any... I mean, I know it sounds a silly question, but any sort of recreation time or sort of social time?
Oh, no.
You were continuously...
Well, yes.
Yes, on the... Right, I think we've covered most of the rest of that. So, you'd... I mean, what about unit morale? I mean, did people suffer from fatigue and sort of...
I only had one situation of desertion. Hmm. And this was at... Wrethlem, where our famous bridge was built.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
I sent a corporal back across the river to go and get some bits and pieces, whatever we wanted, and that's the last I ever saw of him. Where he got to, how he got away, I don't know. That was the only time I saw any sign of any dissension. Most of the chaps were 100%.
Had you noticed anything about him, you know, that he was stressed or...
No, well, perhaps he was a bit more intelligent than the others. Put it that way, he was, actually. I believe he was the son of a regular army major, which made it even worse.
He was posted as missing, absent, without leave.
I've never found out what... Oh, I wasn't interested in him, really, you know, but after the war, the 2IC was this... friend Gregory, I asked him about that and he had no recollection of it, but he must have dealt with it because he was being the 2IC of the company, he would be, but he has no recollection of it.
Yeah. Just how tired were your chaps getting?
Oh, very tired, especially after a thing like, I know after this Wrethlem Bridge business, I think we slept for 24 hours.
Was anyone getting ragged or, you know, getting... Anyone getting ragged or a bit stressed out with all this?
I don't think so. No. You're all very young, you know, and flexible. You just got tired, but apart from that... Now, and I say they were the most wonderful bunch of chaps I've ever come across, really.
Did you ever...
Considering they, nobody knew anything, they're from all corners of the world, but they all pulled together.
Did you ever get visited by padres? Or?
Yes, we had a super padre.
Mm. Do you remember his
chap
name?
Called Dave. I can tell you a naughty story about him, but oh. I don't think I'd better.
Oh, I think you ought to.
Well, when we got to Hamburg, we took over a millionaire's, or the company took over a millionaire's residence, and we had a big party there, about a week or 10 days or a fortnight after the war had finished. And we'd captured, or the brigade had captured a Rhine barge full of champagne, so you can imagine it was a good party. Mm. And in this millionaire's garden, there was a fountain and it still worked. And I have a recollection of the chief padre of the division, who we used to call the archdeacon or the bishop, and our padre, which we used to call the bishop, standing arm in arm under the counter, under the fountain, with a bottle of champagne in each hand. Now, the padre, who shall be nameless, came from a little Welsh village, you know, Methodist parson. I just, you know, he was really, but he was a very, very nice chap.
Yeah.
Very nice chap.
So did he take services at all while he were coming up through Germany?
Yes, he did the odd one, yes. Mm. But of course, a lot of their work was social work, really, families. Mm. I remember, while we were waiting to go across the Rhine, while I was filling in the time when I should be resting, I got a message from our company headquarters, go down to divisional headquarters to sort out a chap's matrimonial problems. And there was all this confusing traffic, like the M1, five abreast, with stuff coming up to cross the Rhine. There was me in my little Jeep trying to get back to sort out a bloke's matrimonial problem when there was a war on, you know. This is typical of the army.
So what was his matrimonial problem?
Oh, I don't know. His wife had run off. Of course, the trouble was, you see, wives left on their own used to run away with the person, and of course...
And the soldiers would hear about
it. Yeah, oh, yes, you know. Oh, that was a celebrated thing. Dear John, that was the celebrated letter that came from the home.
So it was your part of your job, though, to
also, well, you yes, well, you helped in what manner you could, you know. But it was really the company's headquarters and the padres. People, you got involved with it, you know.
Mm. Was religion at all important in the company? You know, individuals. Did you see religion being important to individuals in the field at all?
Well, there are times when one is a bit more religious than others, aren't there? I think put it that way.
Not many atheists on a battlefield.
Oh, no. No, you're right.
So, but formally, you wouldn't... No. No formal, oh,
no.
Regular.
No, no.
Yeah. So...
when you say formal, of course, I mean... Sort of in England was the old church parades and things that, but you know.
You didn't do any of that.
Well, not once you cross the water.
Yeah,
oh no, 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 no.
Yeah. What about post? Did you get post?
Oh yes, very good, very good, very good.
Yeah.
Yes.
Was that's quite an important day when you got?
Oh well, of course you like that. Yes. Mm. Of course, when I was out in Burma, if you got a letter every 2 months, you know, you're lucky.
Mm.
Then you've got 10 all at once, you see.
Yes. Yeah, So, right, okay. So, you got to Hamburg.
Yes.
And you were... What were your duties then?
Can't really remember. Well, I don't think we did very much, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. I think we, according to the book, which I go back for reference, I think we did one or two jobs. We... I remember going to, of course, we got close to Belsen in out one time, and that was pretty awful.
Mm, how did you know of that?
I didn't actually go into Belsen, but for miles before we got there, we got all these people streaming out, going down the road. Mm. And of course, when they came across any German properties, they did what you would expect them to do.
Were these people out of Belsen?
Yeah, well, and yes, and as we went into Hamburg too, there was a labour camp there, and that was pretty rough. And we, of course, part of this, we, I think, seem to remember vaguely that we spent time trying to contain these people to keep them from roaming around doing what they would expect them to do.
These were displaced persons.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the ones near Belsen, had they actually come out of the camp?
Yes, yeah. I think so, by the look of them.
Really?
But they weren't the skin and bones one, but they were pretty rough, you know. They probably hadn't been in there that long.
Yeah. Did they?
And of course, these Russian soldiers too. There were those. They got out of these camps. Oh, in Hamburg, an interesting thing there. we'd taken over some houses as billets, and I'd got a sentry outside as a matter of form. And a German general in his equivalent of a German jeep, and his two men turned up, and the great big German general's great leather coat, you know, touching the ground, looking a 100% German general. And he came up, and he wanted and he stopped when he saw my sentry, and he came up and said to the sentry he wanted to see an officer, you see. So he came up to me, so the first thing we did, stand to attention. He took his revolver off him. He just come straight from the German army, this fella had. So we had the general standing to attention. And of course, weren't any good at German particularly, but I gathered from what he was trying to say that he wanted to hand over about 10,000 troops. A hell of a lot of troops, anyway. And so I thought, well, this is a bit beyond me. So got on the old blower, and they said to the company headquarters, said, send him up to the HQ, you see, which he was sent up there, but I had a bit of a rocket afterwards. Apparently I shouldn't have treated a German general in that manner. But the times were the times.
You won the war.
Yes. I think he was rather annoyed.
Yeah.
But anyway, we made him stand to attention.
So how long were you in Hamburg?
Not very long, but, well, just mid-June, May. Only about 3 weeks. And then we all moved, the whole English-British army, you know, we moved out and went down into the Ruhr. And there was a bridge between Dusseldorf and Neuss, a big floating Bailey bridge across the Rhine. And it'd been built by the Americans. And we took over the running of this bridge. And the one quite interesting thing was, I mentioned it in the book there, but I'll say it again, is that we took this bridge over from a German, an American unit. And this American unit, they were the 25th Tank Destroyer Unit or something, but unfortunately, they'd come very late into the war and were looking for souvenirs. Now, my blokes, there was more souvenirs in the back of our lorries than there were equipment, you know. And we'd got everything from our admiral's swords from Hamburg and everywhere. Stuff you'd have never got back to England. So that night, my blokes, with the American soldiers, sold all their gear to the Americans at about hell of a price. That's all our chaps finished up with a lot of money. And the Americans were very happy, and off they went.
So you had contact with quite a few different nationalities.
Well, not really. That was one of the very few times.
What was your sort of opinion of the American engineers?
Very good, except that, you see, they were far advanced than we were. I mean, admitted, when you're building a bridge under fire, you have to do it by hand. Well, we built lots of bridges not under fire. The Americans have got a crane there to help them, but we hadn't, you see. I mean, they were way ahead of us in that respect. But we hadn't got a lot of time for them because, they'd got so much of everything, they could waste it.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, if our soldiers fired a bullet, they fired a bullet aimed at something. The Americans would just get up and go like that, you know. And that was the difference, really. They'd got everything, and there were so many of them.
Yeah.
But they were very good in certain respects. There was the, you know, when we got the supply of petrol was a critical thing during towards the end of the war because the lines of communication were so long. And the Americans had got, well, I think it was called the Red Ball Route or something. Anyway, they had Negro troops driving these tanker lorries and lorries full of petrol. And they are from the channel ports right for sort of hundreds of miles back, and they supplied the whole of the both armies with petrol, you know.
Yeah.
And the way they did that, we couldn't have organised anything like that. Well, we wouldn't have the equipment and the lorries in the first place, but I'm sure the Yanks were very good at that sort of thing.
Mm. Mm.
But
what did you think of them personally, the ones you met?
Well, I don't know. The only time I really contacted was back on this bridge that we took over from the Yanks. We took over... you see, these bridges, there were two compounds on either side of the bridges, and there were a lot of people moving all over from back to France or from France to Germany, or people displaced people there, that's the term. And there was a corral at one side, and we used to let them through for an hour, and then and if anything broke down on the bridge, because they had their old tractors and things pulling trailers, we had a great big American wrecker, and we used to pull them off, and if they didn't go, we just pulled them until they came, you know, and probably the damn thing was wrecked by the time it got to somewhere. Nevertheless, they had to keep the bridge clear, you see. And the other thing, that was the wrecker we were given. I was given a small landing craft to patrol the river, because this at that time there were not known as werewolves, which were German kids or youth who were supposed to be floating mines down the river to blow the bridge up, you see. And we had to have this we used this patrol boat to prevent that sort of thing happening, pick them out in time. And we also had a couple of machine guns on either end, a couple of Bren guns, so if we saw a mine floating down, so we could have a pot at it. Nothing happened, of course. And the other thing was, they gave it to cope this problem, was a great big searchlight. And there's a huge thing as tall as this room. The idea was to shine it up the river at night, you see. Well, I don't know whether the Americans used it, but I had to take this thing over from this American unit, and this American officer was trying to show me how to work it. And he said, "Say, Lieutenant, you turn his lieutenant, say, Lieutenant, you know this, that, and the other." And he gave me, in about 20 minutes, about a 2-week course on how to operate searchlight. Needless to say, we never used a searchlight.
What about the Canadians? I mean, you had some...
Well, I only came across them across there once, and that's when they happened to be... We were in this transit camp at Canuck. Mm. That was their sort of war area, had been. And so otherwise, we didn't come across them.
You thought of them as very different to the Americans, did you? I mean, are they one of us, or...?
Oh, yes, I think you're probably right there, yes. Yes.
What did you think of their abilities?
Well, they were very good. The thing was, of course, all our soldiers was a bit envious because they had more money than we did. And but otherwise, very little contact, really. Yeah. Very little contact.
What did you think of the German soldiers?
Everybody respected them. Mm. No doubt about that. Oh, yeah. And, in fact, thought they were probably the best soldiers in the world. Mm. There's no doubt about that. And, by God, they were tenacious too, you know.
And well-trained.
And, I mean, they hung on to in areas and times when they should have gone home, sort of thing. But a lot of other troops would.
Yeah. So who were you actually fighting? Were you fighting Nazism or Germany or...?
Well, quite frankly, we didn't know about Nazism. We thought Germans were Germans. Mm. We only heard about this Nazis after the war, hadn't we? Mm. Big excuse.
Yeah. So were you sort of rerunning the First World War then? I mean, you were fighting the Germans again.
Yes. Yeah, oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Mm. Yeah.
And you mentioned Hungarian soldiers.
Yes.
Did you see any?
Yes, they wore a brown uniform, yes. Actually, at this bridge at Western, I'm pretty sure it was about that time, because I must have gone across with the infantry, I don't know, because, yes, I must have done, because I wouldn't have seen it otherwise. The British company that was put in what was a real training exercise. There was some the enemy, which turned out to be Hungarians, were in a certain place, and they did what I thought was a two flankers. It was a copybook exercise, and they went in with a bayonet at the end. I could hope that was surprising. And a lot of yelling and shouting, and afterwards all these other blokes, Brennan Brown, in the far distance across the meadow, put their hands up and they came in and they were Hungarians.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that must have seemed rather exotic, wasn't it? You weren't expecting to see...
No, we just thought, more fool you, you know, fancy fighting for the Germans, you know.
Mm.
Really.
Mm.
Yeah.
Right, OK. So from Hamburg you went... Sorry, you've told me that, haven't you? So how long were you there?
I forgot the name. In the Ruhr, Düsseldorf Neuss, yeah. Well, only for about a month.
Right, yes.
And then in June, I left for to go to the Far East.
Right. Just one more thing. What did you think of these displaced persons? Because there were a lot of them about, weren't there?
Yes. Yes. Well...
What was your opinion at the time?
We felt sorry for them, I suppose. But quite honestly, I think a lot of them adapted themselves and were quite happy to do what they did. Mm. I mean, the French, for instance, who went to work in Germany, when I came across those, they seemed very happy.
Mm.
In fact, one particular occasion, I came across, in the course of our... going through the countryside, I came across a German farm, and there were a lot of French labourers working there, and the men and the girls were so involved with each other they didn't want to go home. In fact, it was very embarrassing.
Because there were a great movement of refugees.
Yeah, yes,
westward,
yes, yes, yes. Again, I didn't have a lot to do with it because I left so quickly, you see,
yes,
off the end of the war.
That's it. So it was in June 1945,
yes,
that you were told. How did you learn that you were going on elsewhere?
Well, just had a message, you know, report back to the company, report, you know, this, that and the other, go back to England, you know.
Right. So you travelled back knowing that you were going to go abroad again.
Yes.
So what were your feelings then? Because you'd sort of, you know, you'd come and you'd done the...
Done our bit.
Europe, hadn't you?
Yeah.
You'd done your bit.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't imagine I'm really pleased, would I be? Because I could be got married just since during the war.
Mm.
Yeah.
So
and
you'd
then,
be away from your wife.
Yes. And then I was away for 2.5 years.
Yeah.
Mm. And then, of course, when I did eventually find myself abroad, I got shoved in the Indian Army.
Mm.
And we were lost.
Mm.
At one time, I found out... All our documents were... And our demob was put back for weeks after we... I mean, we thought we'd be demobbed on a certain day.
Mm.
Because of the situation out there, the demob was put off for a month.
Okay.
Then it was put off for 2 months. And we got really exhausted.
The civil service has a reputation for that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So just going back to... excuse me. You left Europe, so how did you get back to England? Was it just you, or was this...
Oh, by the time...
Your platoon?
I must have... No, it was just me.
Just
well, odd individuals.
Yeah, right, okay. Do you know how they were selected?
I haven't a clue.
Right.
Well, I suppose it's on your DMOB number, really.
Mm.
That was it.
Okay, so you were nominated
for
the Far East.
Yeah.
So how did you travel back to England?
Rough. When you're in charge of your own affairs, you travel with comfort. But when you're at somebody else's beck and call, you travel as you're told to. No, we drove back from Dusseldorf to Brussels, I think it was, in the back of a lorry, you know. And then from Brussels, how in the hell did I get to Ostend? Well, on the train, probably. Anyway, we got on a boat at Ostend and finished up at Dover, you know. And we, of course, accumulated all sorts of illicit arms. You see, I'd got a real selection of revolvers and things, Lugers and God knows what. And when we were on the boat coming back from to Ostend, they said, anyone with all these arms, you must be handed in. So we thought, hello, we know what'll happen. It'll be handed in to some quartermaster sergeant. He'll take them down the road and sell them all for £100 apiece. So we all threw them in the sea. Except one or two, which I kept.
Yeah, got a couple in. what was it like to be back in England then?
Very strange. Very strange. The thing that amazed me mainly was, the first thing that struck me, but of course England was getting a bit out of hand, things hadn't been taken care of, was that how green everywhere, and all the trees were over the road, and all the hedges were over the road. Of course England was like, because they hadn't been cut back in, but it really did strike me, it was incredible.
As a contrast to
Europe.
Yes,
yes.
Yeah, so much damage.
But apart from that, life was still hard in England, ration-wise, so, in fact, anyway, I was so glad to be back. You know, you don't notice these things, do you?
So you had some leave when you arrived,
yes,
did you? Yes.
Yes. And then, while I was on leave, Japan packed up. That was the 23rd of July. See, I came back in June. I'd had a fortnight's leave. Mm-hmm. And I reported back to place down south, and Longmore. And the Jap thing came through. They said, oh, Lord, I don't know what happens now. So I got sent back on another week's leave.
Oh, so you thought you might not have to go?
Go, yes. So then they said for the following week, we went back to Longmore, but we signed in the morning and come back at night. You know, didn't know what to do with us, you see. And I got Mary down there, and for a week or 10 days, and stopped into some dig somewhere, you know. And then we got on a troop ship and got on the train at Longmore, went up to Liverpool, got on a troop ship, and
did you know where you were going?
No. Maybe we don't go east, but in those days, people used to go east, into the Far East, via India. And they did a certain amount of time to acclimatise themselves in India. But when we got halfway there, they said, oh, we'll go straight into Rangoon, because Rangoon's been liberated, sort of thing. And so we went straight into Burma, into Rangoon.
So when you left Liverpool, I mean, had you been given tropical kit or anything, or told where you were going, or?
I can't remember quite honestly. But I tell you something that was rather amazing. While going back in history, our story anyway, I'll just tell you the story, then we'll pack up. While I was waiting at Halifax to go abroad, I with a major, drew 30 troops, and we were sent down to a Russian POW camp, which was about 2 miles out of Beverly. And in there were Russian soldiers that had been captured in France, that had been fighting for the Germans. And of course, and we were taking them back to Russia. So we got all these Russian soldiers, and they were mostly Far Eastern Russians, you know. They got the old Mongol look on them, most of them anyway. And we got a trainload, a couple of hundred, must be 300, 200 or 300 people of them. And we assembled them. I'd got 30 troops around them to guard them or usher them along. And there was one Nissen Hunt lot which wouldn't come out to join the parade. And the British MPs went in with batons, bang, 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 blood all over the place, thrown in the back of a lorry and taken straight to the train. We marched this 200 gents along the road to Beverly Station. We put them on a train, locked all the doors, got in the rear carriage ourselves, finished up in Liverpool, got into Liverpool at dark, turned and went on to Liverpool docks, all lights, great big ship, because they look huge from the side of the docks at night. Down came a lot of Russian generals with their grey coats and the red bands. And we stood there for about an hour while they counted all these chaps up and and checked who was who and whatnot, and then eventually went back and put them on the boat, and we went home.